Being trained in an effective crisis management system is imperative for minimizing behavioral issues and the need for restraint in schools and treatment facilities. But not all crisis management systems were created equal. If we are going to meet the growing intense behavioral needs of individuals while simultaneously reducing the need for restraints, every leader and policymaker who is involved in areas related to behavioral challenges should understand what a complete crisis management system is comprised of and how to embed one into any setting. For more information, check out crisisintervention.com. Welcome to the Crisis in Education podcast, where behavior science meets education. I'm your host, Dr. Pauly, exploring avenues for change and growth alongside my guests. Join us as we work towards turning crises into opportunities. Okay, welcome back to the Crisis in Education podcast. I am your host, Dr. Pauly, and I am here with the behavior chef, Clint Evans. How you doing, my brother?
Hey, Pauly, man, I'm great. It's so nice to actually get to connect. You've been a big part of ABA for a long time, but even in my own house, man, a couple years back when you were when you were coaching in the corner of that title fight, that Russian guy, I think you were training.
Alexei,
at the time.
Yeah,
Alexei. I actually watched that pay per view, and I saw you back there, and I looked at my wife, and I was like, "That's Pauly. Look at that's my buddy." And then I think I messaged you because you made around that time on my podcast, I had some dudes from a pretty big podcast for fitness, and one of the guys that was on there was an MMA dude, and he brought your name up, and
cool,
I was
man.
Like, "Well," he's like, "Yeah, my buddy Pauly, back in Florida, man, he teaches this stuff," and he started talking ABA a little bit, so I was like, "Oh, look at that dissemination on a massive stage that has nothing to do with any of our framework other than it being disseminated." So good work, man.
I appreciate it, brother. Well, you're doing the same thing, which is very cool because
you.
A lot of people don't realize the application of the science. So if they're working in education, for example, and that's the focus of this podcast, a lot of people only see the science as something we do with special needs students.
Yes.
And they're not aware that the science can be applied anywhere that people are behaving. And if you want to improve results, you know, that means you have to change behavior. We need people to do something more, less, or differently. So Clint reached out to me because he's going to talk a little bit about his program of Behavior Chef and helping, you know, with health and wellness. And I thought, you know what? I have another podcast, The Thoughts and Rants of Behavior Scientists. But I'm like, I want to bring this on the education podcast because I've read recently that there's like an epidemic, and it might not be so recent, but epidemic of obesity in education. Now, in terms of like just straight weight, I don't care what somebody weighs, right? What I'm
Absolutely.
Most concerned with are the health risks, right? Diabetes, cardiovascular diseases, you know, joint problems, sleep apnea, you know, cancer, psychological impact, all these different things that could be associated with that. And I know that, man, you probably never heard any of my, because this is, well, you did mention that you work in education, but I believe that educators are the backbone of our country.
Agreed.
And that we should be treating them with such care and respect. And they are so stressed, and it's causing them to engage in, you know, poor eating habits, right? And, you know, they're not getting the exercise that they need, and for, you know, for folks that don't care about, you know, the people, which, yeah, you can't make it about the students without making the people. Everybody's talking about student achievement, Clint. But you can't get the best out of the students if you don't get the best out of the teachers. And so
Amen.
That's why I think this discussion is really important. If you're a school leader listening to this, a district leader, you need to consider the health and wellness of your people. If you really want to have student achievement and you want to maximize it, you got to take care of your people, man. And we're not doing a good job with that right now.
No, I agree completely. I spent the last few years in a school system where I was one of two BCBAs for a high school. We were on site, special needs high school. We worked through special school districts of St. Louis, and they're relatively known throughout the country for like their specialized schools. They're a little different than most places where we have, you know, we have, gosh, what do you call them? Like the calm down rooms. We have, you know, so we have some kiddos there that are pretty high needs in behavior, right? And so, but I took an OBM approach and started with my teachers. and making sure their environments are comfortable enough to be able to step out in uncomfortability. You know what I mean? It's like motivation. People look for motivation, and there isn't a lack of it. I think you and I know it. The secret to motivation is behavior momentum, right? And so it's like you don't run until you take a step. Like you can plan as best as you want, but if you don't do that plan, and I think what I find honestly, Polly, like that's the path of least resistance for people, where like they get a plan in place and they're like, okay, I feel better than I did before because I have a plan. And sometimes that's just enough to where they don't feel the need to act the plan, the fact that they have one, and I think we all do that with something. It's like that's enough, you know what I mean? And it's just some stats to throw at you, man. Like right now in education, roughly 10 to 20% of kids obese, and we're talking kids like under the age of 12, right? And this is just generalities. 43%, if I'm not mistaken, in the last stuff, 43% of Americans are considered obese or morbidly obese. I even think morbidly obese is like in the 30%. So a good makeup of our obese problem is towards those latter issues
And
with
what's
health.
the, do you know what the international average is? Isn't it something like less than 30% or?
Yeah, we're definitely leading by a leap and bound for sure. And when we did some talk about your research, man, when we started Behavior Chef, one of the things that I looked at was like dietary retention. Now, we started on the basis of nutrition, so we were really focused on that because I had lost 100 pounds using analytic principles, and I became a BCBA. And then I was like, there's not a lot of talk. There's a lot of talk about fitness, but at the time, that was kind of the big boom back then. Like some of the guys did major presentations on like Olympic weightlifting. I think that was Jim Moore, where they
I
were
was
like doing
there.
the the forward and
Just on
backward
top.
snatch and stuff. Jim's a good friend of our podcast too, so I've had him on a few
It's my
times.
dog.
Yeah, man, he's a good dude, good people. So I started digging into the research behind like just general dietary constraints and what's going on. So one of the flagship pieces of literature that I found, and I'll find the link to Cynthia at some point, but long story short, it said that in this, it was kind of a meta-analysis of a bunch of these things, and what they found was 80% of people who lost at least 10 kilograms would gain that 10 plus an additional 10% within the year after they initially lost it. And what does that tell us, right? There's a deficit in skills, right? There's some sort of reliance somewhere other than themselves. There's something that's off
Well, it's
with
a
the
skill
ability.
deficit or a motivational deficit. And I would think that,
Exactly.
and you'll, I know you'll dig it out, but I recently read that part of the issue is that as you lose more weight, you tend to start, create your body craves more calories. Apparently, like once you get like, I think it was like, I forget, like 80, for X amount of pounds. That's why people plateau, because you're thinking there was like something physiological going on, but it's really something psychological, apparently,
Yeah, no, you're right.
that's
You're dead
tying
on.
into motivation, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy how much all this stuff goes back to, eating just as a behavior. So like a couple of years ago, we got a Behavior Chef got asked to do like a, what do they call it, like a spark meeting, where it was like a 5 minute, like I got a break at one of the conferences. There was like a a few 5 minute presentations where we just did these little videos to play in the background, and we did we made an argument that the oldest social behavior that exists is eating a meal. And because all of our oral traditions came down around those types of things, meals have been, we need them to survive. So the idea of the familial or the, I guess, conglomerate meal, where it's not just you and I by ourselves in front of a TV, right, has been an idea where we've been doing it for millennia. So we get that idea of the nature and nurture concept. And so I just think, I say all that to say this, I think that style of behavior is a little bit different and nuanced than pretty much anything else because of its longevity and its importance. And then we have a society that tells you to be this way, that way, or the other thing. And so then you take this relatively simple thing that we do as fuel and social lubricant, if you will, and then it becomes this personal morality issue where food is good and bad, clothes are good and bad, I'm good and bad. So then there you're getting into the psychological component, because as you and I know, food in and of itself is not a moral construct. There's no good or bad foods. There's just food and how we attend to use it. So that's the sort of the impetus or the genesis of our style of behavioral coaching. We call ourselves nutrition behavior specialists.
Let's take a quick break.
If you work across schools or treatment facilities and you want an environment characterized by students or clients behaving well and meeting their goals, you need Everyday Behavior Tools. These tools are so powerful and generalizable that you can train anybody, anywhere in them. And here is the best part. The entire instructor training is online. If you are interested in becoming an Everyday Behavior Tools trainer to improve behavior in your organization while also generating more income for yourself, go to crisisintervention.com. Well, am I wrong in again, this is your area, but it just kind of makes sense to me. I just look at things from behavior principles. So I find that I feel like, you know, it's like every action has an equal reaction, right?
And, yeah, yeah.
For a while, people were being shamed for their weight. They were being shamed. And like, you know, now we're at a time where like we're saying, hey, listen, we need to accept people. And I am very accepting, right? We do need to accept people.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, let's accept people, whatever your body makeup it is, whatever that is, right? Mm-hmm. But let's make sure people are eating healthy, because I think the wrong message is being disseminated, right?
Yeah.
Let's accept people how they are, but let's also make sure that they're engaging in behaviors that are going to lead to longevity, health, and wellness, right? Because if we're saying accept, but you look and they're eating fast food all the time, they're eating terrible, like, I don't know that is, you know, that's not good for them, you know? And
no.
And so the message is wrong. Let's help them eat right. And wherever their body goes in exercise, right, it goes. That's fine.
Yeah.
Does that make my, what am I saying?
Dude, I'm on that journey personally. There's two things that came up for me when we were talking about that is like, there's an acronym that's gotten a lot of steam the last couple of years called HAES, you know, health at every size.
Okay.
And, at first the movement, I was really into it at first. And then I had a couple of podcasts that I did that I scrapped completely, if I'm honest with you, because when I started digging into it, it was this at the time, at least my understanding was this whole idea where regardless of what a body looks like, that's healthy. And I disagreed with that statement initially, simply because that's not necessarily the idea of health. But as I understood it better, the concept was really what you were just saying. Let the body be what the body is, and let's find ways that fit you to get it to be as healthy and as vibrant as possible. So I really enjoyed that environmental switch. I think that gives people a lot of I don't know, like I'm a big guy. I'm a yo-yo dieter. It's even in my bio. It's no secret. Like at my best, 6'4", 290 pounds, 15% body fat. That was my best about 2 years ago.
Oh, you were lean, brother. 15%.
Yeah, I had my first kid coming. And so I started powerlifting again. And that's my mode of that's my personal preferred mode of exercise. And I ended up getting like, close to, I got really, really strong for me. My joints started telling me. And I just like for, I live in Illinois. So for kicks and giggles, I looked up like our heavyweight deadlift of the state. And I was less than 80 pounds away from breaking it just by working out by myself.
Oh, cool, man.
Yeah, yeah. So but since then, just life. 3 years ago, I got diagnosed with bipolar 2.
Oh, okay. I mean, that's depression, isn't it?
It's manic depression. Yeah. So I have hypomanic episodes, which they don't, mania is what you see in movies, you know, breaks in reality, all that stuff. There's no psychotic feature to bipolar 2, but it's more of like racing thoughts, energy, irritability.
They call that like cyclothymia or something like that.
Yes,
rapid, right?
Yeah. Cyclothymia is actually a portion of bipolar or bipolar 2 where you can cycle between the cycles within minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so cyclothymia is what I'm diagnosed with bipolar 2 with cyclothymia, where usually an episode will be one stage for an extended time.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's to me, it was kind of good that way, because if you notice you're in one, then you know another one's coming, like the other side. But for me, I can cycle between them depending on the stress levels in my life. So that's why I have that phrase, protect my peace. That way I'm very aware of what's going on. So I started this journey on medications, Polly, and we know about neuroplasticity and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I had to relearn how to learn the last few years because of the medications that were leveling out the way my brain worked for 30 plus years. So now I've got a little stability. Now I'm feeling back to myself. But as you know, when you change things like that, there's a lot of side effects. So I lost my hair, which actually I enjoy. It's way better to take care of, way easier to take care of. But then I gained 30 pounds, and nothing that I would do, I ended up hitting metabolic syndrome, which is where medication affects your metabolism and it slows it down. And so here I was, feeling great up here in my mental space, but then my shirts got tighter and the dryer kept making everything smaller for some reason. But I say all that to say this, that's where I am right now. I'm on my journey back down. And I want you to know, like, if you're listening to this, it's okay wherever you're at. That's exactly what Paulie's talking about. Where you are is where you are, right? And so let's go from where we are to where we want to be. I finally found out, like, right now I'm sitting at 330. I'm a little heavier than I've been for a while, but 290 is where my body's happy. I look good, I feel good. My lab, like, even now, my labs are great, but I don't want to stay at this level for myself because I know historically that can over time deteriorate my levels. I get blood work every 6 months. So I check those things, but I know for me, health at any size is when you hear 6'4", 290, you're either thinking a full, like a, an NFL dude, or you're thinking like, oh, that guy might be a little big, but I actually look and feel great at 290. So I don't mind talking about it now because of the psychological flexibility that I've gotten. And that's what we want to bring to people is the ability to just talk about this kind of stuff, just like we would talk about our favorite sports team.
Yeah, and folks, I'd like to frame this. When you, I'm not a. I love the act matrix, man. I'm not an act guy. I like to keep things very behavioral, radically behavioral for me. That doesn't mean I'm just not that guy. I don't know enough about it to speak about it. Right? I did write an article with Dr. Kevin Polk, who is one of the
Oh,
founders of Act
cool.
Mate. Yeah, on the use of the act matrix in MMA. And
Oh,
so if you're an
cool.
educator or behavior analyst listening to this, because when the thing is, like, when you hear words like psychological flexibility, like, what is that stuff, and like, so I
Yeah,
like to
good
keep it
call.
very, very simple, man. And I like to get people to draw a picture in their mind. So, if you think values, right, you say, I value being healthy, right? That's in the, so it's a four quadrants, and that's in the bottom right hand corner, right? And so you've been the center observing. The bottom left hand corner, we talk about psychological stuff. Well, what we're really talking about is covert behavior, just behavior that you can only observe, your thoughts and feelings and body sensations. And when you get this thought or this feeling, we tend to engage in behaviors. If it's like an aversive thought or feeling, something that feels bad, that allows us to escape it. And sometimes those behaviors are just fine if they align with your values, right? But if you're engaging in behaviors like, eating, like comfort eating, and it's like high fat, it's unhealthy food, well, that you feel better momentarily, right? So you're winning the battle, but you're losing the war as you're moving away from your values. So being aware, and this is why it's so great in our field, right? Prompting awareness is incredibly important. This is why we focus on data, right? So if you're aware that when you think or feel this way, you engage in this behavior. If you're aware that's misaligned with your preferred way, like think about it as a preference assessment. We can also, for behavior analysts, call this a functional response class. I don't know if other people are calling it that, but that's what I call it because it makes sense. Then we know that we need to initiate a replacement behavior, right? So I just like the idea of that's what they're calling psychological flexibility. I just call it like initiating, but we need to know what behaviors to engage in. And Clint, I think this is where you come in to talk about this stuff. But if you can, as you talk about, so we engage in this behavior, we move towards that value, we move that towards that value, we probably produce all sorts of positive reinforcement. Like we're like, it's gonna keep our behavior going. Like that first time you get on the scale and you see it go down a little bit, or you start to feel a little bit better, you feel like you're pants aren't fitting tight, man. That's a huge reinforcer for people. Or somebody says you're looking good, but eventually you just feel so good that you want to keep doing this stuff. And these are all these naturally occurring positive reinforcers. And that's the idea, is to get people behaving well enough and long enough that they produce these valued outcomes. But
That's
it, so
it.
if you were, if you were to just come in and support a school, for example, first of all, speak a little bit about what challenges that they we're experiencing, and we hit it a little bit. I don't need to dig into, like, as I already talked about what the implications of not eating correctly are, right? But what are the challenges of being in school? Like, why are they not eating this way? And then knowing this stuff, like, how might Clint and Behavior Chef come in and support change through a behavioral approach?
Sure, man. I really appreciate that question because The school day is so busy with so many other things, and I think it really comes down to a lack of education as far as some of the basics goes, and a lack of focus. Most things are scheduled for kids. Like nowadays, you got like Alabama gave a seventh grader a full ride scholarship for football a couple of years ago because he was the top prospect eighth grader or whatever he was. And just stuff like that is happening now. So kids are becoming adults way too fast, in my humble opinion. And with that brings the issues of adults. Most of our adults don't focus on wellness, nutrition. Like we have natural sedentary lifestyles now. I have a sun lamp in my office because I know I don't get outside enough most days.
Well, aim this discussion at the adults. I want this to be aimed at the
Both?
teachers. Yes,
Okay.
mainly the
All right.
teachers, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I worked with some teachers as well. And I know, man, like you said, teachers are the backbone and they're underrated because you're scheduled for these amount of hours, but you're not working those amount of hours. The teachers that I've known, they work at least, 1.5 times the amount of work they're paid for.
They do,
And
man.
there's all that stuff left on the table.
And the
So
school leaders too. My wife's school leader. They're working the
not
weekends
just,
all the time. People have no idea, man.
and they don't talk about it. They do their job because they love what they do. That this what we do in general takes that oomph. You need the desire to help people.
Bro, but I don't know about you, but I don't know how many educators you know, but I can't tell you how many I've seen retire and then die. And it's like heartbreaking, man.
Yeah,
They
it
spend their
is.
whole life doing this. They don't even get to spend their retirement, like
Yeah,
it's
dude.
so sad.
The thing that, and a lot of schools, they work towards that cap year where they get all their stuff, right? And so then you're done, you get it all, and then you're gone. And so part of that comes down to this health and wellness part. It's not just nutrition. Like we look at seven different pillars. So if I'm looking at a teacher, one of the biggest things that I'm going to look at is environment, not just at school, but are you carrying that stress home? Right? Do you have a mindfulness practice for yourself to be able to stay grounded? Do you have a favorite way to get what we call like a full plate, right? Veggies, proteins, carbs. Like, are you generally doing things that better you than hurt you? And part of that is like, I talk to teachers all the time about cortisol. So cortisol is this hormone that is released by stress. And essentially, when we were cavemen, right, and we would get this is the idea behind it anyway. The theory is all those years ago when we were chased by saber-toothed tigers, our bodies were like, run so you can live and then kill so you can eat. Like that was the thing, was survival. Well, now we don't have that survival instinct need as much. And so when an email comes through that makes you anxious and your fight or flight's activated, your body looks at it as a saber-toothed tiger. It doesn't know it's an email. So then cortisol is released, and cortisol is, you see it on all those commercials. Beware of your cortisol levels. Well, here's what it really is. Cortisol is a hormone that's released when you're stressed to slow down the release of fat cells so that you can live longer without food. That's the concept, again, theory by the evolutionary scientists of nutrition. Because there were a day, you can imagine there are times that we're getting chased for a while back in the day and not getting to eat much. So nowadays we have the reverse problem. Nobody's chasing us and we're eating too much. And so then how do we mix that gap? So part of the issue for a lot of my teachers was sleep routines for themselves and just eating mindfully, which is that idea of like eating for not for comfort, but for energy and a little, we go by the 80-20 rule around here. So a little comfort is needed, right? 80% clean, 20%. Mine's sour gummy worms. I will eat a whole bag if you give them to me and not even, break a sweat because it's part of my 20%. It's part of that, like you're talking about, those inherent naturalistic reinforcers, to use the ABA term. Basically, the non-ABA term is just you like it and it keeps you going. So I talk to educators about things like that because they get so wrapped up in my relationship with educators. They get so focused on their students and on their work and getting things done and being a good steward of their classroom that all that time they put in overshadows themselves, right? And so I've seen teachers come to school. I'm sure you have, right? And higher ups. I'm not just throwing teachers there, but educators at any level come to school sick, come to school, just anybody else would be like, dude, I'm not coming in today. And they're like, no, I got this one kid who's struggling, and I want to make sure they're doing well, just
Incredible
so
stuff, the stuff that they're doing. Coming
absolutely.
early, stay late.
Yeah.
It's all at the unseen expense of their health, their physical health, their
Yes.
mental health, all these pieces of the puzzle that people, if we could see actually like the cost to them personally, like there was a data point that you would see, out every week, like our whoop, like
Yeah.
we have biofeedback looking on. If we had some sort of mass biofeedback, we would see that they're like literally giving themselves or giving away a piece of themselves,
Yeah.
and they unnecessarily, I believe. They
I
shouldn't
agree.
have to. The system is set up in a way that's putting these guys in a high stress zone. And I'm sure that by not eating correctly and not living in a way that that produces better outcomes for themselves,
Yeah.
it's complicating the process.
But I like to look at it this way. Like I ask, what kind of educator do you want to be? And of course, if you ask somebody that who's in education, they want to be the best educator they can be. Well, how can you be the best educator that you're going to be if you're not taking care of the one who's leading? You know what I
Right.
mean? Like,
Yep.
so when I frame it that way, when it's like your health is just as important, so you can be that leader you want to be longer with less effort and enjoy your life, enjoy your job, and not just slave through it.
We could crush something together, man. Me
I'm
and
about
Nika,
it, dude.
you and your guy, yeah, because I think about, I actually frame it through like these four hats. I wrote about in my recent book, Positional Authority and Leadership, right?
I have
And
to read that one. That one looks great.
oh yeah, it was fun, man. So this is going to tie into what we're talking about here. The
Absolutely.
four hats are leading, training, coaching, and managing, right? So the leading hat, because I think about a lot of the stress happens, unfortunately, through like leadership of the school.
Yeah.
That's not that sets off people eating bad, talking about the cortisol, right? They're getting stressed and they're going to want to eat comfort food. So good leadership is not about title, but the leading has the MO. So
Yes.
it's about creating a want for people, right? So you mentioned earlier, like if you want people to eat healthy, there's got to be a want created for them. How do we do that? So this is about inspiring people, right?
Yeah.
Towards a common goal. But inspiration is great, but it's not enough, right? So now we got to make sure that they have the knowledge and skills, because this ties into what you were saying, right? They have the knowledge and skills to effectively engage in the behavior that are going to move them towards that valued outcome, right? So that's great. So we give them the knowledge and skills, but then that's not enough, because these are both still antecedent strategies. And while antecedent strategies get behavior going, they don't keep it going. This is where the coaching piece comes in, right? And where training is about skill acquisition, the coaching hat is about supporting the generalization of learned skills into the natural environment, right? So you need that
Absolutely.
piece, getting people to behave well enough and long enough, like, oh, look, my belt's a little bit tighter. I'm feeling better. People are saying nice things to me about how I look, and that's an important piece of the puzzle, man. That's a reinforcer. But attention is the most powerful positive reinforcer in the world. People are
Easy.
dying over it, right? Getting stupid selfies. I was just watching somebody get flooded. But the last one, that's the managing hat, and that's about maintenance of skills, right? And that's about
Yes.
having a system that continues to deliver reinforcement for what you're doing. A lot of people don't have these systems to keep them on track. And it sounds
Yeah.
like what you bring to the table kind of encapsulates these four hats, if I understand what you have
Yeah,
going on a
yeah.
little bit, right? So maybe you can unpack that just a little bit more for us.
Absolutely. So along that same line, we have three stages. So before we're doing this class now called Reframe, where it's a collective of 10 to 20 people where we do it every 6 weeks. It's a 6 week course. BCBAs get free CEUs just for being a part of it. So usually
How
it's
many
about
six people are in it? How many did you say? 12?
We're going 10 to 20. Right now
10 to
we're
20,
about
okay.
11. So we're about nine. We're starting in a couple weeks, May 6th. Monday, May 6th at 7 p.m. CST. That'll be when we start. And we'll do that every week for 6 weeks where we move through these modules. And along with that, each week, depending on how long we go, we're able to give that amount of time to CEs. So we're a CE provider. We're just using that to give it for free. So one of the reasons we're marketing towards BCBAs and BCABAs is not just for our business, but it's to get these concepts to them so they can work with schools and their like I'm working with a day program right now where we're creating an entire wellness program for the day program of adults who work at this workshop. So that kind of stuff. That's what we the end goal is to be a resource.
I wonder,
So
could it
that's
be like, so if we were framing an education, could it be a co like a grade group cohort, or maybe it's a cohort of school leaders that are
absolutely.
coming in so they can promote health and wellness at their schools? That
Yes.
would make sense. Okay.
So we take a train the trainer model, where we want to, we talk about it in ABA, behavior skills training. It's essentially like we want to train the educators so they can go train other people, right? We want to disseminate. So we've broken down acquisition, generalization, and maintenance, which is the ABA terminology, into learn, lead, and live. And so when it comes to that coaching feedback in the in these groups, we're teaching people first to learn the way to acquire these skills, you know, the little different look where we most of all of our clients have to take a life values inventory. This is where the ACT part comes in. So let's say someone comes to me and says, hey, let's just stick with the weight, right? I want to lose weight. That's why a lot of people come to a coach. Okay, cool. Let's get started. We get started and I have this values inventory and they send it back and I say, okay, so we're on our meeting. I hear you want to lose 15 pounds, but all of your values, the high ones, are about your family and you have an isolated job where you're alone a lot. So why don't we look at that idea of 15 pounds in context of your values? So we're creating that MO there. And then we set up a system to where the basics of behavior change are there. So we have acquisition, generalization, and maintenance, and learn, lead, and live these stages through the concept and the lens of their personal values. So then there's always ongoing reinforcer assessments. We're basically being able to catch in real time if people start to burn out based on our data, based on our conversations. So that's why we make it this collective, because like we talk about here, you got to be honest about this stuff. You know, you got to be able to be vulnerable. So we want to create that environment where they can be. And to point it towards schools and things, like I have some ideas that we've put together, like a behavior chef boot camp, where we were going to bring educators or families together with these students and teach them some of these skills for like cooking, movement, wellness, you know, kind of like a live thing, and then give out some resources that we've been able to collect over time. There's a great book called Broccoli Boot Camp. Gosh, her name eludes me right now, but it was with a BCBA who, Laura Sterling, I believe her name is Dr. Laura. She was a feed or a pediatric specialist as far as BCBAs go. She worked with a feeding specialist who was a doctor at this clinic, and they together wrote
Laura
this program.
Severling.
Severling, thank you. Yes, Dr. Laura Severling. Shout out to Laura. She wrote this book with this other gentleman, where it is a resource
Keith
for
Williams.
parents and families. Yeah, thank you so much. It's been such a long time
I
since
got Amazon
I
up. It's got great ratings too.
dude, it's great. So they have actual data sheets in the back that are tear-outs for everybody. And then each chapter is an ABA gold mine. There are research articles everywhere, but it's written in plain language. So parents can, to reverse Will Smith, parents will understand. You know what I mean? We might be, we, I don't know who's listening if they're too young for that reference, but we it's all good things. So when it comes to, you know, gearing that towards schools, I would love to be able to come in and do conversations or symposiums about what schools' needs are, talk about it, and then formulate a plan, not only an OBM, but we work with students as well. So this stuff, like you said, it's applicable everywhere.
It really is, man. And I would think that again, for the this it's got to be a real culture builder. How good it feels for people to unite and support each other. I can imagine all sorts of peer contingencies in place, some very simple metrics that people are collecting and reporting out and celebrate success as a group, but they're also looking at their own individual behavior and they're able to lean on each other. And you know, to me, this is the kind of thing that would be like that a whole culture could rally around. You know, to celebrate, like, hey, look, we're getting fit as a school, you know, and it's great to do that together. And I just bet when you unite people around something like this, you just almost know that it's going to positively impact student achievement because people are going to be feeling better, you know, that sense of unity people have, all sorts of positive things. Because unfortunately, that seems to be the only thing that state education, the department, is concerned about. I'm like, man, there are a number of other metrics that we need to be taking a look at. And I think physical health is
Agreed.
one of them, right? Mental health is another one, you know?
Well, I completely agree, man. And you know, with all this stuff, like it sounds like a lot, but it's really simple, right? When you break it down, you become, I feel like I think it was Einstein that said, like, if you feel like you're an expert at something, you should be able to explain it in two sentences to a 5-year-old, something like
Yeah,
that.
if you don't know, if you can't explain it simply enough, you don't know well enough. I'm not saying that's exactly what
Exactly.
he said. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Thank you. So, when it comes to this kind of stuff, I've boiled it down to three words, man: prediction, choice, and control.
Okay.
And I think those are, to me in general, as far as ABA goes, if somebody asks me what are the cornerstones, those are the three things that I give them, because I've seen in my work as a solo behavior analyst, I'm a consultant as well. My full-time job is a consultant, so I work with day programs, schools, police departments, people in their homes. Like, I have a diverse group right now.
I'm making notes, by the way, while you're talking. That's why my eyes are all over the place, okay? For
Absolutely,
our,
man.
yeah,
You're
for posting
good.
it.
But prediction, right, is the ability to go, like, let's talk about teachers. Part of the anxiety, right? Oh man, I didn't pack lunch for tomorrow. I just get some at the school, and lunch is Bosco sticks and all that. And I'm not knocking school lunch, not whatsoever. I think it's a great resource, but if we're honest, it's not as healthy as it could be.
Yes.
And there are people way above my pay grade that take care of that. I'm just making an observation. But let's say the teacher, one of their problems is not knowing what they're going to eat, so they just grab something that's convenient.
But right, and there's like, and there's it's a kid's birthday every other week, you know, and so we're
Absolutely. Pizza
perpetuating all this
parties
stuff.
and
Yeah, man.
right. So then prediction becomes, okay, there's our first deficit. Let's answer the question, what are we going to have for lunch? What do you like? Talk about a quote unquote dietary thing where the guy goes, what do you like to eat? What do you mean? What do I like? Aren't you going to tell me to eat salads and boiled chicken? Yeah, if you're Arnold in the 80s, but let's go ahead gosh, 70s, I guess. But let's go ahead and talk about real world stuff. One of my favorite, like, I'll give you a quick tip that I give to people. Find a copycat recipe of your favorite fast food, like 5 ingredients or less, with make it at home. So I love Big Macs. So we get lean ground beef. We make Big Macs as a family, make some French fries. We're all having Big Macs for the night, but man, they're macro Big Macs. So, it's just little switches like that. But that gives you prediction. And then, as you know, we just talked about it earlier. Prediction is that concept I said with some people make a plan and they don't like they're that's good enough, right? So I can predict what can happen. And then when I have prediction, as you know, even if it's forced, I have choice, right? Where I can now that I'm predicting, I can go ahead and eat that convenient thing, or I can go ahead and make the stuff I like. So then I'm getting some choice in the matter. Even when I'm eating the cruddy stuff that I don't want to eat, but I that just knowing that is an MO to where it takes away some of that shame and guilt, some of those covert things that lead to behavior. And then with prediction comes choice, and with choice comes that big C word that they've been looking at for a while as a fifth behavior explanation, which I think the research has kind of died out on for now, but there was some research going around that was positing control as a fifth function of
Yeah.
behavior.
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother podcast, but the concept I think it reaches here is that when I'm able to predict what's coming and I have a choice in the matter, then I feel a sense of control.
I think when you have such control, man, I think, you know, bottom line is we can align our behavior with present and future outcomes. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? But the
And that's that
problem,
flex. Oh, sorry,
yeah,
man. Go ahead. Go
that's
ahead. You had
okay,
a
man.
thought.
The problem, I man, I don't love the Hexaflex. I love the ACTmatrix, man. I think the Hexaflex is just too complicated for people.
It is very complicated.
Yeah, I steer them towards the ACT matrix. But bottom line is, here's what we know about the science of human behaviors, that people are going to engage in behaviors that produce the most immediate outcomes. And this is why
Yeah.
knowing what your values are, and like you said, being able to predict, a lot of people are it's immediate and certain outcomes. And so people eat poorly because they're not experiencing the immediate, right, of
Yeah.
gaining weight. And they don't, it's uncertain whether they're going to have a heart attack in 5 or 10 years, right? If
Right.
you knew that by eating this now and staying on this pattern that you were like 92% going to have a heart attack, it's almost certain to change your behavior right now,
I
right?
hope
But
so,
because
'cause
it's
then we have some other
uncertain.
stuff.
Well, right, but
Yeah.
it's uncertain.
Yeah.
And this is why it's important to you know, like you look at, you know, you're looking at your own data regularly. I imagine that another piece of what's going on is that teachers need to have their own like Fitbits and looking at you know,
Yeah.
some sort of way, some sort of metric way beyond just, you know, metrics beyond their weight, you know,
And
to measure their health.
there are grants out there too, man, for schools to be able to grab things like Fitbits and things like that for health and wellness things for schools that can't necessarily afford it. It's not in their budget. Heck, you've seen some, I'm sure you've seen some of the research out of our field where people were able to get a grant for the schools that were they were using. So there's a lot of stuff out there that, unfortunately, as you know, like resources are buried sometimes. And we're just trying to uncover them and polish them a little bit so you can see what's out there. And we're trying to be one of those polished things, if you will, where it's not hard. Let's put it this way. It's simple but difficult because we make things difficult, right?
Yeah,
It's
but
a
we were
simple
talking about this.
application.
We were talking about this offline, about just, there so many of the world's problems, like 80% of the world's problems could be solved with 20% of behavior science, because everything, comes down to behavior. We could just do this and keep it as simple as possible because, complexity is the enemy of execution, the ex enemy of sustainability, and the enemy of scalability. We need to have, we got to have things simple, man. And so I what I hear from you is that that's exactly what you are bringing to the table. You're making this stuff simple for people to understand and to engage in. And I think that's, obviously that's what we need.
Can I give a couple of like real world examples? Is that
Oh
okay?
yeah, please do.
Okay, so we do both. Right now we're on a bit of a hiatus for like our one-on-one coaching with people. SAN, stands for a couple of conversations that I've had. You know what I mean? We take them on sparingly as of late, but the process is so similar to everything that we do where we talk about those learn, lead, live concepts. But this is where values become so powerful in that act. We do use the Hexaflex, but I do it. We only use portions. And here's why. A
Use
lot
that
of our,
metrics, dude. Use that
oh yeah,
metrics. I'm
I'm gonna
telling you, brother,
switch.
switch.
I'm gonna switch for sure. Because it is, you're right, it is simpler. But we spend a lot of time in diffusion,
Okay.
which is the I tell people like this, think of Pavlov's dog and reverse it, where you're able to unpair something and repair it to something else. A quick example that I give is like if we're working with somebody who continually will say something like, let's say I'm working with a client that's like, man, I ate cake again and I just hate myself, or I just feel shame, or I just feel. So if I'm hearing this data that's coming out where it's a permanent product or a verbal agreement with themselves where they feel that this specific word, you're no longer allowed to use that word, but you're allowed to say it. But when you say it, now it has to be something astronomically ridiculous, like big purple fluffy bunny. And so then when we do that and I tell them why we're doing it, it's not a secret, but then it sounds ridiculous, but then it gets funny where we're no longer attached to shame, attached to the idea. So then we switch it to that big purple fluffy bunny as an interim, and then we repair it to something else. Like, okay, now we're eating cake because we enjoy it, not because it's shameful. And so that's sort of how we use ACT in a small way. But I've had I think my favorite example from coaching is I had a lady come to me, 10, 15 pounds, wanted to lose. We did a values inventory, and a couple weeks in, I get to know people a little bit. She gets to talking about her partner and how they used to do all this stuff together in college, and now that they're out and married, and you know what it's like, man, when you get in the real world and everybody gets working, and all of a sudden you don't have as much time for each other, and then if you're not active with that, right? I have a wife of almost 10 years. If you're not active with them, that it can become roommates real quick. And so I said, hey, why don't we look at cooking some of your favorite, like your value is time with your dude and cooking. Like that was a big value, like being in the kitchen. So why don't we try to connect those two, right? You guys eat dinner together. So let's bring him in and make a menu where Monday through Friday, you guys have the ingredients, but you just get to kind of mix and match what you want to make for dinner and make it together. So she started doing that. And a couple of weeks later, we stopped talking about weight altogether. Now, here's the funny thing. When she finished with me, she ended up dropping a few pounds, but nowhere near what she wanted. I think she dropped 5 pounds, which is awesome in 12 weeks, doing it in a natural, sustainable way. But she didn't hit her 15. But what we uncovered, right, was her goals were a little bit misaligned, where she fell back onto an old pattern of like, well, now I've got a lot of time to myself. Let's work on my fitness. And then she used to say, like, my partner, we used to run together. We were in running clubs, like all this stuff. So all that social reinforcement she's missing out on. And the only missing piece that I only learned through those values was her partner. So what did we introduce? The partner. Lo and behold, we quit 2 weeks early because she felt that she had reached where she wanted to be. And it was reconnecting with her partner that led her to be successful in the other things. So environment shift along with behavior change so powerful. And then Reframe itself, this course, which is the kind of idea where we took, 4 years of coaching literally internationally. I've coached hundreds of people across the world via my chair, which is such a ridiculous honor. But people pay us money to help them, and we have about a 90% success rate on goals. So we're pretty good at what we do. And then we get into Reframe, and what we do then, we took all that data from research and created this 6 week, think of it as a continuum where it's like we're doing the learn, lead, lifting in 6 weeks. So the idea is to give people the behavioral framework to do this stuff themselves, to understand what it means to acquire a skill, what it means to fall a little bit, right? Skinner said some version of the fact that there's no such thing as a learning or as a wrong answer. There's only a learning opportunity. So in the midst, we're using the psychological term of reframing a thought to reframe a relationship to wellness. And then when we're done with that, the hope is that you're in 6 weeks, you're good to start on your own, away from some of these people, apps, these crutches that I think can be awesome. But like you said, it can be a little too reliant sometimes. If Weight Watchers said I got points left, then that's good. I'll have that donut. But what about if we just learn through Weight Watchers and then we understand I don't need it to have that donut and be healthy?
Right.
And so I know that was a bit long-winded, but that's sort of like
Well, that's how
the
we maintain it far after Weight
yes.
Watchers goes away. We need habits. We need, again, to get people to
That's
behave
it.
well enough and long enough so it just becomes what they do. And
And that's why
it's these,
6 weeks is a start, right?
yeah. Well, it's a
Yeah.
launch, you know what I mean? It's like you said,
Yep.
behavioral momentum. My whole book, Quick Wins, is about that, by the way, brother. It's about, getting people engaged in low response effort that produces visible
Love
value
that.
outcomes.
I
That's
might pull that
unfortunately.
for some ideas for us.
Yeah, man, sure, man. That's why I think fad diets are so successful, though, because they tend to produce quick weight loss for people,
Ooh.
and that's why they get hooked on it, man. So it's
Yeah.
behavioral momentum, but moving, that does not lead to sustainable outcomes. That's a quick fix, not a quick win.
Yeah. Well, speak to the behavior analyst in me a little bit. Like, that's a competing contingency. And for the that's a big fancy word for I can have this now or I can have this later. Which one am I going to choose? I see going around all the time. Like, you have that 20-year-old influencer who's got six pack abs eating a piece of pizza. It's like, do you want to look like me? Follow what I'm doing and you can do this too. And people are like, yeah, let's do that. And it's like, do you have 5 hours to dedicate to the gym? Can you eat 500 calories a day and drink 3 gallons of water? You'll look like me in 6 months. You'll die. You'll be dead in 6 months.
Yeah.
Like, it's not sustainable. And I think when we're
No.
able to get people comfortable with the idea of longevity and stability and sustainability.
I hope that we have I wish more people, it's starting to happen more and more now, like massive influencers like actors coming out. I
Yeah.
remember heard like one of the Avengers guy. What's the guy? The Thor guy
Yeah.
or
Hemsworth.
him, yeah, him and another one came out recently. They were just talking about like the struggle with maintaining, like people see these bodies and they're like, well, I want to look that way.
Oh,
But
yeah.
like these guys end up like not eating, man. You know what I mean? They don't do, they put their body through hell
Literally.
to get this brief shot, right? That is not
Yeah.
sustainable. And you're seeing them, they're also all pumped up. They're lifting weights just to get on film to look this way. But they do not walk around this
No.
way, not even close to this kind of. So there's this false sense of what a good body should look like. And
Right.
people want that attention, but that's just not reality. And people are judging themselves by this kind of like false god, so to speak, of a body, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I get it completely. Because, like, as you know, right, it's like judging a book by the cover, right? And it's every book, if everybody's a book, every one of us has a different dust jacket, right? Like, we have the same pages with different stories, and none of our front pages look the same. That's the glory and the beauty of being a human being, is that we're all connected by this crazy world and all of these different atmospheric things within ourselves and within literally the atmosphere. But then we have the ability to express ourselves so differently. And I think that's such a superpower we don't lean on. Like, let your I can't I think it was Easy A was a movie back in the day, early 2000s was and one of the phrases that came from that is let your freak flag fly, right? Let your be yourself. And there's now that's a big push in psychological circles is helping people learn how to be themselves because a lot of people don't know who they are, right? They're a teacher or like, well, I'll be honest with you, man. When I first became a BCBA, It struck me as weird when I saw so many BCBAs going, "I am a BCBA, like that's me." Like, no, it's not. It's a push. It teaches you. You learned it to help people. You are whatever your name is and whatever your heart is. You are not a role. A role fits within you. And I think when we're able to reverse that concept within ourselves, man, there's. I had a buddy the other night, and this isn't to gloat about me. This is the work that I've put in over these years. He was
Understand?
over at my house, and it made me cry, if I'm honest with you. He just looked at me. We were doing some work for my son's birthday. He helped me build a, not help me. He built the tree house, and I put the last two screws in. But that comes with knowing my place. I'm not a carpenter. He is,
Me neither,
but I
brother. I can
help
throw
him.
my hands, that's where it stops.
Absolutely, right? I can lift weights and paint stuff. That's so I know where my I know myself, right? I know my boundaries. And that's but one of the things there is he told me, he's like, man, I don't know how to say this, but he goes, I'm envious of the peace that you radiate. And I was like, man, you know, because I'm like I said, man, I have several jobs. I'm in school for my doctoral degree. I am a dad. I'm about to be a dad again. My wife's a stay-at-home mom, and we're blessed enough that we were able to buy a house in this economy, and you know, I'm able to support us. So, but all that is because of I'm able to understand who I am, and I have, I don't know if my wife will ever hear this, and she doesn't, you know, have to know that she is the greatest support system I've ever had. So I have an environment that I've cultivated with the people around me. There's a popular thing that's been popping up in psychological circles lately, and it's basically based upon the psychological research. You're the sum of the five people you spend the most time with. You know, how we act at any given time is influenced by essentially the main five people that we spend time with. And here's the thing, it doesn't mean that I'm spending time with you, it means who I'm interacting with. So if it's a podcast host I'm listening to, I'm going to be a little bit more like them over time. So why not spend more time with myself and learn who I am so I can be more like me?
I like that, brother. I th and
Yeah.
I and I think it's obviously coming back to some of the ACT stuff, and that is
Yeah.
determining what, you know, there's be more like me, but knowing who you are, knowing what you
Oh.
value, and are you actually aligned with your values? And a lot of people do not know what their values are. Which is sad, you know. It should be
Yeah.
like a core thing that we're taught,
Right.
you know, in elementary school, learning about your
Right.
values, learning about your behavior, learning about behaving in alignment with those things, you know, et
Well,
cetera, et
think about the
cetera.
power that could be now if we were able to get in there and start doing that. Right.
I agree, man.
And
I
I think that's
agree.
part of what you're doing, I'm sure, right? Like that's one of your big MOs is like,
I use
let's.
it through, you know, I use the ACT matrix in the values piece through an OBM lens. And so we get together with
Cool.
people and do shared values, right? In
Yes.
fact, in our new book coming out, Quick Response, and it was second edition of Quick Responses, we're teaching teachers how to use the ACT matrix to engage students with developing classroom
Oh,
management plans. So
man.
finding out what the
Love it.
values are of the classroom. But then also for the school leaders to engage their teachers with, you know, what do you value, and figuring out, like, you know, how do we improve behavior there? Because a lot of times people go off the rails when misbehavior occurs, and we all tend to yell and do things that, you
Yep.
know, pr produce an immediate invisible outcome that's reinforcing. But it's, again, what I like to say, it's winning the battle but losing the war.
Yeah, we're still human at the end of the day. And, you know, like I'm a parent who does, we're attempting restorative parenting. Both of us had crappy relationships growing up with our families and stuff. And again, that's personal stuff. That's not like saying parents were bad back in the day. Just we had now I'm learning what trauma was for me as a kid. So I'm unpacking it a little bit. I didn't know it as trauma at the time, and most of us don't. But I'm unpacking it a bit, and I'm watching in real time. I'm raising a son, I'm raising a boy, I'm raising a future man, right? And I want him to be the kind of man that I'm becoming, as far as like being able to be myself, being able to be helpful for others. And while I'm watching him grow, like I'm seeing parts of him, you know, as me, like little Clint. And it's crazy that. Crazy is not the word, but it's interesting to me because my doctoral degree couldn't be any different than ABA. So I'm getting a doctoral degree in clinical psychology with a focus in somatic expression.
Okay.
So it's the
I'm sure
idea
if it's
of
working, you can explain it behaviorally. Put the behavioral lens on it, you know?
absolutely. It takes the covert thoughts, feelings, all that stuff. But in the midst of that, it's connecting a new stimulus that's loud enough for you to recognize over and over again. It's so we call that embodiment. And literally being able to understand a thought and see it as a stimulus and know, okay, that's just a thought, right? Or, oh, hey, last time that came up, I was stressed, Right. So that might be a trigger to let me know maybe I need to enact in some of those mindfulness strategies or take some time. Like, take a mental health day, teachers. Dear God, please.
They do, but God bless them also. They all take it on
Still
the
work.
Mondays or the Fridays, so that's the problem, you know.
Right.
And but I get it, man. You know, I mean, I don't blame them. I know just as being an administrator, and my wife's an administrator,
Yeah.
but they deserve. I think there should be year round school, but like meaning that
A
there's like
4-day
6 weeks
week.
on, 2 days
Oh,
off, or
yeah.
something like that, right?
Yeah.
4 day weeks, great, whatever. But they need more time to recharge. They need more time to
Yeah.
prep, right? And so maybe
Right.
that. Maybe they're off for a week every 6 weeks, but that time is for their mental health. It's to prepare their lessons, you know what I mean? To get some learning, you know,
Yes.
all these pieces of the puzzle, you know, to exercise together, whatever it is. Let's really support our educators, man. And what you're saying is kind of, you know, ties right into that. So, one little note, brother. This is actually not a you mentioned something about trauma.
Yeah.
I look at trauma through an OBM lens, of course, and
Cool, yeah.
I look at I have a and I'll drop it in the show notes if I remember to do it about unpacking trauma. So there's a
Yeah.
lot of schools and organizations that say they're trauma informed, right? And I'm like, well,
Yeah.
here's the problem with that: that if you don't have a result that you're measuring, right, and you have not aligned behaviors up the performance chain, then you are not trauma informed.
Amen.
Because we can't expect, because I love the principles of trauma informed care. They're what I would call values, right? Safety,
Yeah, I agree.
choice, empowerment, right? Respect. I love this stuff. I call it the way shit should be. And so why I
Yeah.
say that, because I hear people saying I'm taking trauma-informed approaches with others. I'm like, well, tell me, do you not believe that everybody should be treated with respect and everybody should be treated, provided choice and empowerment, right? So we should all be engaging these behaviors. And I think that what we're calling trauma too often is might be taking away from the people who are really
Yeah.
severely traumatized, right? Because
Yeah.
everybody's experience is relative to their own experience. Something that might seem very mild to you might have been
Yeah.
like a huge impact on me, right? But we have all experienced this stuff. And I think that we really need to focus on, this is completely off topic, brother. You know what I
No,
mean?
but
But I just, when
it's a
you
good
said
point to
it,
make, man.
yeah, I think it's important that we focus on resilience with people and
Oh,
building
man.
resilience, because there's no way we can create a prosthetic environment that's going to stop this stuff from happening. So we have to
Yeah.
equip people with resilience, which is really just adaptability, right? Being able to adapt and having the tools to assess, problem solve, make decisions, and take actions that are going to allow people to continue behaving, to work successfully, work through these challenges. I
Absolutely,
think, you
man.
know, and the one thing that they also need to be resilient with, again, instead of saying like, hey, leave them alone, you know, don't. We should not be fat shaming anybody, right? There's no doubt about that. That's the wrong thing to do, right? But let's teach people to eat well, right? To
Yeah.
live a healthy lifestyle. Also, but when people do that stuff, because unfortunately, there's idiots in the world that are going to do that
Yeah.
stuff, right? Where they can maintain and continue on in the right direction. I think
Yeah.
part of the well-meaning people have said, let's not fat shame, right? And we definitely should not do that. Let's teach people what to do instead. We're not talking about the replacement behaviors for the person that's being fat shamed. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? Let's do this stuff. Like, you know, like, hey, here's what you can say, here's what you can do. But also make sure that you are engaging in healthy behaviors, which is the primary thing. If a lot
Yeah,
of people are
dude.
saying this stuff, then if it's just your way, tell people like, hey, screw up, man. I'm healthy. I'm doing this stuff. You know, go be
Exactly.
you. You can ignore them. There are all sorts of behaviors. But if you are not living a healthy lifestyle, right? Consider what you
Interesting.
might do more or less or differently. That could be a data point for you just to look at.
Yeah. Well, and dude, I've been fat shamed on my own channels. I've been fat shamed on Behavior Chef's page because I don't look like your
Really?
ripped. Oh, God, yeah.
Please don't tell me he's a
But
behavior analyst, is it?
I don't no no not this one.
Yeah.
I did get a pretty interesting kickback when I had started doing 75 hard through a behavior analytic lens, and a lot of folks had an issue with Andy Frizzali, but that's a whole nother topic. Whole nother topic for discussion, but it's just interesting when you do stuff that you think is going to be helpful and people are like, here's my opinion of you because of what you're doing. I'm like, okay, you can have that opinion. That's fine. I sleep fine at night without it. Because as you know, you're in the social media world of ABA too. It's kind of an, well, it's becoming better, but it's a kind of an uncharted territory. So we're going to get what we get, that's a whole nother tangent as well with you. But you mentioned something earlier when we kind of, I guess, normalized the idea of the psychological flexibility, right? Just the ability to pivot in a way.
Yeah,
I
initiate
love,
behavior. We got to be able to
yep,
initiate replacement
yes.
behavior.
And I'm a nerd for research. I'm a nerd for physical understandings of research. And so some of the research that's coming out through the area of neuroplasticity. And so I know you probably know that term. For folks
I
listening, it's
believe in
literally,
neuroscience, man. It's data for
dude,
us. It goes
love
hand in
it
hand
so
with behavior
much.
science. Yeah, just a
Absolutely.
metric for
Literally,
us.
it's literally the covert, like
It's a
you're
tangible, it's making
seeing,
salient.
yeah,
Yes,
man, it's
it's
so
data.
cool. And so it's literally like the end result of this idea of pivoting. So I tell people it's like this: your brain, we're able to see now on fMRI scans where specifically like one of the things I like looking at is people. So I'm a minister as well. So part of that is health and wellness in my spiritual life and in my church. And so one of the things I look at research based on this at times, and you know, regardless of your faith system, people that pray or have a meditative practice have been shown to be happier, healthier, and all this stuff. And we can see parts of their brain light up associated with joy and happiness while they're, you know, in these meditative states. And so what's really cool about that moving on is when you have, and again, I'm not explaining this to Paulie, it's to anybody listening that I'll nerd out on this stuff with you all day, so get a hold of me. But long story short, man, when I think a certain thing, there's a certain path my car takes on a highway. And then when I don't want to think that way anymore and I start doing something different, that alternative, there's a detour now. And you can literally see the new highway be built over time on these fMRI scans.
Yeah.
And man, it's just so wild.
I love it, man. Like I when I talk about the ACT matrix to again, I think about it from radical behavior. I'd say like everything I explained to you it was completely in from radical behavior. But I know
Absolutely.
that like it's almost like teaching people to be their own little behavior analyst, right? It's like
Yep.
self-behavioral assessment, right? And so and self maybe behavior analysis. But here's the simplest way that I've used it, and I can tell I know that it has worked for me so much. I teach it to my
Yeah.
fighters. I've had my dad committed suicide last year, man, right? And
Oh man,
so
I'm so
it was a rough,
sorry.
that's all right, brother, you know, but
Yeah.
the ACT matrix really helped me, right? And I'm
Yeah.
also very resilient, have a good support system, so it's fine. But like this thought would keep coming to my head. And first of all, I had to be aware that this thought came, right? And
Yes.
when the thought came, I would get hooked on this thought and I kept thinking about it, right? But once I became aware that I keep thinking about this stuff and I would, and when the thought came up, I'd get all these crummy feelings. I started like, because there's nothing I can do to actually change that. There are things that we can do and behaviors that we can engage in that will allow us to change some sort of outcome. I cannot change the outcome, right? So I
Right.
had to be aware that I was thinking that. And my replacement behavior, and this was huge for me, was as soon as that thought came in, I took a deep breath and I focused on that breathing, right? So it's a little behavioral momentum. And it
Yeah.
started to give me like immediate relief. And I just started engaging in other behavior, whatever I was doing, right? And what I recognized was that by thinking about it, you're strengthening these neural pathways, right? Talking about
Yeah.
neuroplasticity, it's a highway for this thought. And I
Yeah.
needed to not feed that thought, right, with my attention, right? I should not reinforce that behavior because I'm going to get more of that behavior. And so by doing it, if I could have collected data on how many times I was thinking about it was coming to my head probably like 30 or 40 times an hour, right?
Oh
Bam,
man,
it was
yeah.
popping it back. Now it's probably like 5 times an hour. Now, again,
Awesome.
I'm hesitant to actually click data on it because I feel like it's attending to it. You know what I mean?
Right,
And I want to
yeah,
strengthen
then you'll
that.
reinforce
I'm
it.
just completely guesstimating it, right? But I can tell you that it has worked so well for me,
Yeah.
and that's been very acute. Yeah. So, but I imagine like for what's going on with your with like eating habits or whatever, like when you're starting to feel bad about yourself, you're feeling tired, all these bad feelings and thoughts come up. They can serve if you have a replacement behavior to engage in, and somebody's put on your leading hat, you've put on your leading hat, you're motivated to do it. Those thoughts serve you because they become a prompt for you to do the right thing, right? So if you reframe it that way, like I'm having this thought, what do
I
I
do
do?
like
Let me
that.
do this stuff, and it gets you moving in the right direction. So it becomes an aid to you, a friend to you, you know, in that
Absolutely,
sense.
man. You've actually just kind of proven my point from earlier for prediction, choice, and control. Because then, you know, now I'm learning. I wanted to get a doctorate away from ABA, but in psychology, so I could learn both sides of a coin. You
Well, you
know,
could speak the
I
language to both sides and explain it,
yes.
interpret it behaviorally. It's still going to come back to
Yeah.
behavioral interpretations.
Always. I will always be a behavior analyst first when it comes to my role. My wife's a therapist. So we have that dynamic just naturally. So then I wanted to learn about actually what's really cool, my school that I'm with. they not only look at the current Westernized psychology, but then we look at the Eastern concepts of where psychology sort of began thousands of years ago. And so we're seeing these philosophies that have just grown over time, and you can put that in a behavior lens, so it's really cool. But you just kind of talked about what we look at as, like, as far as that covert behavior, right? It's a lot more nuanced than this, but usually it becomes thoughts, emotions, actions. Sometimes those first two can switch, but it's always, that permanent product that we see goes in for those thoughts and emotions and actions. And then when you just talked about that pivoting that you're doing with your situation, with your recurring thoughts, you just explained prediction, choice, and control, right? Prediction is that stimulus. And then choice, you can engage, like you even said it, I'm hesitant to take data because I know it's going to reinforce that behavior in some way. So then that thought might increase and the behavior might get worse while you're trying to take data. And that's not least, that's not most effective. That's actually harmful for us, right, in the long run. So then we get prediction choice. And then when you're choosing to do that other thing, who's the one that's really in control? Even though the thought's still there, you have the power. And man, as you know, when you can empower someone, you can't stop them. There's no greater power than to know that you have it within you.
Man, I appreciate that, man. And I agree. And eventually, just for behavior analysts, because when I hear the word control, I mean, what we want to take on is the environment's going to control my behavior. If I'm behaving well enough and long enough, it's going to produce some sort of naturally occurring consequence that's going to sustain me,
And the control that I'm speaking to, as far as, let me clear that up for BCBAs, the control that I'm speaking to is the control of the person to be able to understand the stimuli in their environment.
And your
So the
environment
environment's.
also is your, and there's, we have the environment inside of our skin too. Skin, we would not discount that, right? So
Right, not at
that,
all.
right, that environment is, impacting your behaviors, your covert behaviors and your overt behaviors, all these things. So, I don't get into the molecular view of things very much, man. So this is
Sure,
getting
yeah.
out of my scope. I'm an OBM,
Sure.
but I just don't
Totally
want
bring it back. Yeah,
people to be
but that
upset about this.
I
So,
totally get it.
well, brother, this has been very exciting
I
to
love
talk
it.
about this stuff. I want you to just send me anything that would go in the show notes where people can contact you. But since they're listening, just let
Yeah,
them know,
dude.
like, hey, if they want more information about what you're bringing to the table or to contact you, what's the best way?
Man, we've made the response effort real low. Head over to behaviorchef.com. You can get a hold of me and Tony individually. All the emails are there. Clint at Behavior Chef, Tony at Behavior Chef. Our podcast is the RSS feeds live on our website, so you can listen to it there. All the stuff for Reframe, as soon as you hit behaviorchef.com, if you're interested, you'll get a sign up for Reframe right there. Anything about us, any resources we've got, all on that site.
All right, man. Very cool, brother. It was good to chat with you face to face, man. I something
I
tells me
know,
we'll be
man.
talking some more.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me today, man. And to sign off the way we do, eat pizza, take data.
Traditionally, many crisis management systems have taken a "what's wrong with you" approach that begins as a person escalates when addressing behavioral issues. PCM, as a trauma-informed approach rooted in applied behavior analysis, shifts this perspective from what's wrong with you to what happened to you by having a complete picture of a person's situation in life, past and present. This approach is fundamental to applied behavior analysis and therefore PCM, as it seeks to determine the root causes of behavior based on both the current environment and the individual's history as a means of individualizing education, treatment, and support. For more about PCM, check out crisisintervention.com.